Leadership is rightfully seen as a positive force in our society. When a sports team wins, we talk about the team showing a lot of leadership. When a business fails, business leadership may be one of the causes. Most Americans are looking to President Obama to lead us out of our current economic crisis. We probably all agree that leadership is good, desirable, and effective. What we may not agree on is what leadership is or how to develop leadership in ourselves and in others. On Amazon, I found 323,437 books on leadership. And that translates into a lot of different views on the what and how of leadership. This diversity of leadership perspectives fits my own experience. The leadership required at the College of William and Mary is quite different from the leadership required at Microsoft. Furthermore, our personal backgrounds are different. Our values, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations, our competencies, capacities, and commitments are all unique. What we can be as leaders, what we should be as leaders, varies based on who we are and based on the situations that we face. There is no one form of leadership that will work for all. Let's go back to the questions. What is leadership and how can we develop it? I've learned several useful ideas as a professor, as a leadership coach, and as a leader. I will share with you a simple definition of leadership and some ways to develop your personal leadership. I will also share with you a technique that has helped me to become a better leader. So, what is leadership anyway? Leadership, at the most basic level, is influence. Leaders make things happen. Leaders move people, organizations, groups, and societies. Leaders set the agenda. Leaders write the scripts. Leaders make the plans. Leaders call the plays. But leaders don't just visualize a new future, they bring that new future into being. If we define leadership simply as influence, though, we blur an important distinction. Managers, whether called a manager, a boss, an owner, or whatever, managers also influence people. How is being a leader different from being a manager? In business, the manager's task is to get things done. The manager uses the organizational system to do what the organization wants them to do. Managers use their legitimate authority to get plans moving. Managers use organizational rewards to motivate people. At least some of our current economic crisis was caused by management. Large bonuses handed out by managers on Wall Street for large financial deals. AIG most recently has been in the news over the last couple days because of the large bonuses they handed out while receiving billions of dollars in governmental aid. This management approach, this philosophy of living, is living your life from the outside in, being directed by the expectations, values, and rewards set by others. All of us spend much of our time living our life outside in. We read the syllabus and parrot the professor's words on the final to get the grade. We follow the college catalog to get the degree. When our manager at work says jump, we say how high to get the pay raise or simply to keep our job. We play by someone else's rules as we influence and as we're influenced by others. But if that's all we do, what a waste. What a shallow life. What a lost opportunity. There is another approach. We can live life inside out. I live my life inside out when I choose my own direction based on my own values, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations. I work within the system or outside the system as I choose. Living life inside out is essential for a leader. Clausen defines leadership as managing energy in ourselves first and then in others. I like that order. I need to know my own purpose, and I need to focus my own energy before I'm ready to lead others. In other words, to lead from the inside out, I need to know myself. Well, let's look inside for a few minutes. Leaders often perceive a discontinuity in their lives. At least once in their life, while following the path laid out by someone else, they got knocked off the path. Something unexpected happened. Behind almost every leader is a story of failure and disappointment. This discontinuity, this failure, allows a leader to step outside the system and to develop an independent point of view. They lead from the inside out because they know what is inside them, their values, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations. Their own competencies, capacities, and commitments can shape the world around them for the better. Each of us has a story. Our stories include failures and discontinuities. This could be an academic failure, being cut from a sports team, a family crisis such as divorce, a severe illness or injury, a job loss or bankruptcy, a violation of personal trust, a crime committed against us. If the event is severe enough, the person in the middle can bear the scars for life. The trauma can shake the person's belief in the fundamental goodness of the rules and systems in which she lives. This can, in an ironic way, plant the seeds of leadership. The trauma by itself is not enough. The story of the trauma greatly influences the facts of the trauma. Let me give you three scenarios. Suppose I have a severe accident caused by a drunk driver. If I believe that I deserved what happened to me because I'm a bad person, that story doesn't help develop my leadership. If I believe that I am a powerless victim, unable to change my circumstances in this accident, that story does not lead to leadership. If I believe that things are wrong and that I should change things for the better, then the seeds of leadership may be sown in my life. The facts of these three scenarios are the same. A drunk driver caused an accident. The interpretation of the facts changes. The story we tell ourselves. If we live stories of our own unworthiness or our own powerlessness, we will not tend to develop as leaders. We will act as if we are unworthy or powerless. These stories will shade the light of our lives. This is not a recipe for happiness. This is not a recipe for leadership either. Evaluate your story. Is it working for you? When you face a trauma, a discontinuity in your life, do you like the interpretation you put on that? If there's a defining theme in your life, if there's a story explaining one or more traumas, and you don't like what the story does to you, change the story. Two phrases may help you initiate a change of story. Up until now, and from now on. Up until now, I've seen myself as a bad person. From now on, I will see myself as a person worthy of respect. Up until now, I've seen myself as a powerless victim. Up until now, I will be a person of influence. Up until now, I have lived my life from the outside in. From now on, I will live my life from the inside out. Let me give you a personal example. When I was in sixth grade, I was placed in the remedial class. I was tagged as not being college material. Why was I placed in that class? Was it because I was stupid? I can make that story fly. My mother, my father didn't go to college. My older brother wasn't college material either. On the other hand, maybe it was because I was the victim of an ineffective educational system. I can make that story fly as well. Incompetent administrators made stupid decisions, and it all came to rest on me. If I had believed either one of those two stories, you would have a different speaker here tonight. Instead, for the first time in sixth grade, I decided to prove that I was the smartest person in the room. I sat in the front of class. Best students always sit in the front of class, just so you know that. I raised my hand on every question. I don't think my sixth grade teacher ever figured out that I didn't know all the answers. I just acted like I did. And she stopped calling on me after a while because, hey, I knew all the answers. I helped the other students with their homework. I led the group projects. And I obtained a new nickname. The professor. My business card today says professor from the second oldest college in America, 25 miles away from where I decided in sixth grade to change my life by changing my story. So what's your story today? When you face failure or trauma, what script runs in your head? Has that story served you well? If not, acknowledge the old story. It's real. Okay? It's there. Put a period on it by saying up until now, and come up with the new story that will shape your life and that will lead you in the future that you want to go to. Okay, this sounds simpler than it is. To get your new story into play, I recommend several things. First of all, write down the new story. A journal or a diary is a good place to do this. Edit your story until the words are right. Make it a powerful declaration of the new future you want to live. This means your statement, your declaration, should be tightly written with words that are powerful for you. As a 12-year-old, my declaration was something like, "I am the smartest person in the room." When I was 30 and a professor at the University of Delaware, my declaration was, I'm one of the top two people in the world working on the intersection of two theories of achievement motivation. Okay, you have to have a PhD in psychology for that to really have power. But it worked for me. When I was 40 and the director of Microsoft People Research, my declaration was, I am one of the three best managers of online employee opinion surveys in the world. My declarations changed with my life's experiences, my life circumstances, and so should yours. Second, get people around you to reinforce your story. It may be your family or your favorite professor. If I understand the ideals of sisterhood at Delta Gamma, the people in the room here can help you reinforce your new story. Tell these people your new story. Ask them to check in with you on how the new story is going. Ask them to remind you of the new story when you find yourself going back to the old story. Change is hard, and changing your story is about as hard as it gets. So get the help you need, get the support you need to change your story. Third, this is the worst part, I think. Expect the work. Okay? You can't just speak a new future into being by magic. It doesn't work that way. Okay? For me, in sixth grade, I had to buckle down and study. I had to put in lots of hard work. It took me 16 straight years of hard academic effort to go from that remedial class to earning my PhD. Expect to do the same if you're going to change your life story. Fourth, don't expect the old story to go away. It will not go away immediately, and it may never go away entirely. Instead of hoping the old story will go away, figure out how to manage it. So you need to know what triggers the old story. It may be a specific situation or a specific person. It may be something more general, like facing the anxiety of a new challenge. Either way, notice what triggers the old story and figure out ways to either avoid the trigger or to reactivate your new story. For me, I notice the old story, I name it, and then I deliberately choose to live my new story. I use a shorthand, which is to refer to my imposter syndrome. When I face a new challenge and that old story gets going in my head, I run a little script. That's my imposter syndrome. I'm not an imposter. And then I fill in the blank with my new story. I screw my courage to the sticking point and I go face the new challenge. When I made my first presentation to Bill Gates at Microsoft, it did not go well for the first 10 minutes or so. I was presenting data from our employee opinion survey, and I put up slides that I thought were really obvious. I mean, very simple slides with, like, very simple numbers on them. And Bill started asking very simple questions, like, how do you know employees changed their mind this year? So I said, well, last year on question 23 or whatever, it was 55% favorable, and this year it's 75% favorable, which I'm thinking, this probably isn't the answer he's looking for, but that's what the slide says. He then followed up with another very simple question. How do you know it wasn't just a different group of people answered the survey this year? Okay. So what's the script going in my mind? I shouldn't be here. I am an imposter. I am not smart enough, experienced enough, or aggressive enough to go toe-to-toe with Bill Gates, who is the world's richest man and one of the smartest. I just want the meeting to end so I can go back to my office, polish my resume, and apply for jobs elsewhere. Okay, you laugh. It wasn't funny. Okay? And the meeting's still going on, and I'm supposedly leading it while I'm having these thoughts. It takes about 5 minutes. The script is running in my mind. Wrong place, wrong time, I shouldn't be here. Okay, I'm an imposter. And then I notice, okay, yeah, I know that story. I'm not an imposter. And I further think to myself, I didn't say this, I have a little bit of self-control, I didn't say this, but I think to myself, Bill, the person you had doing my job last year messed up the survey so bad that it locked up for 3 weeks because of bad software. This is Microsoft, I don't know if you know them, they're a small company, they make software. I am one of the three best managers of online employee opinion surveys in the world. Your people hired me to come in and clean up my predecessor's mess. I smile to myself. I'm ready for the meeting. Can we go on? And the meeting got better from that point on. Okay, so what happened there? I changed my story. And when I reactivated my new story, I was able to go ahead and do what needed to be done. I was able to exercise leadership in that room in front of Bill Gates and all the senior managers of Microsoft. So, I am the perfect model of living my life inside out, right? Not by a long shot. When Kyle first contacted me to speak to you, what happened? I immediately thought, I can't do that. I would embarrass myself. I'd embarrass the MBA program. I'm not a professional speaker. Oh, I lecture, but that's really different from giving a speech like this. I can't do this. And it took a little while. And I said, oh, okay. Imposter syndrome. I'm not an imposter. I can do this. And so tonight, here I am, standing in front of a group of strangers, trying to help you become better leaders. That's the power of the story. Let's think about leadership presence for a few minutes. When you walk into a room, or when you join a conversation, who shows up for the other people in the room? What do the other people experience from you? What is your presence? You might show up as obnoxious, the bozo. You might show up as passive, the doormat. Even though you're actually in the room, you may not show up at all, the invisible woman. Or you may show up as the person of influence, the leader. If you have leadership presence, you get more than your share of attention. When you speak, people listen to you. When you're silent, people ask you your opinion. Leadership presence can show up as synchronicity in nonverbal communication. So if you nod and smile, other people nod and smile. If you cross your legs, act forward, turn and look, other people will follow your lead. Leadership presence makes you a person of influence at all sorts of levels. Balance is essential for leadership presence. John Hederich, former president of Tonka and CEO of Rollerblade, said, "People hesitate in the presence of an unbalanced leader. People follow a leader in balance." Something I found useful in maintaining my balance as a leader is an exercise called centering. Cashman refers to centering as a way to build resilience and to enhance a leader's effectiveness and fulfillment. I see leadership centering as getting to a position of readiness to lead. And so athletes do this. Second baseman prepares for the pitch. The basketball player on defense gets ready. Okay? And so leaders get ready also, not by getting into a certain stance necessarily, but they can get ready in one way by centering. The centered leader demonstrates leadership presence. I like to think of leadership centering in five dimensions: purpose and passion, history and goals, relationships, speech, and emotion. Better than talking to you about centering, I would like to actually have you practice centering with me. Are you willing to do a little work? Okay. Well, please stand up right where you are. Stand comfortably, and it's helpful to close your eyes. I'll keep an eye on your purses. Okay, we're going to take three deep breaths. Inhale deeply. Hold it. Exhale slowly. Inhale. Hold. Exhale. Inhale. Hold, exhale. Throughout this exercise, continue breathing deeply, comfortably, and at your own pace. Think about your purpose and passion. Place your feet slightly more than shoulder width apart, knees relaxed. Notice how each part of your body feels. Notice any sensation, any tension, any pain, any strength. scan your body from bottom to top. Wiggle your toes. Notice your feet and ankles. Your knees. Your thighs. Let your arms hang loosely by your sides. Wiggle your fingers. Roll your shoulders to relieve any tension. Let your shoulders fall to their natural resting place. Straighten your spine so that you reach your full height. Straighten your neck and head. Imagine your head floating almost as if a string is gently pulling it toward the ceiling. Balance your head on the top of your straight spine. Try to rest almost without effort, without using your muscles. Balance your entire length, bone on bone, with minimum effort. You are relaxed, tall, strong and steady, bone on bone. Length represents what you stand for. Right now, you are centered in your purpose and passion. Think about your relationships. Notice your width. Gently rock your weight from side to side. Find the neutral balance point in the middle of your width. Sense the equal weighting on both of your feet. Be aware of your width, of the space you take up. Be aware of the people around you. Width represents your relationships with people. In width, the center is balance in your relationships. Think about your history and goals. Align yourself from front to back. Gently rock back and forth from heel to toe to find your balance point. We are accustomed to focusing out in front of us, but there's also space behind us. Without turning, notice what is behind you. Imagine a massive dinosaur tail extending out behind you along the ground. It fits under the seat. Allow yourself to feel supported by this mass. Depth represents time. Forward is the future, and behind is the past. You are at rest in between the past and the future. You are centered in the present. Think about speech. Notice any talking going on in the room. Notice my own words. Notice the talking going on in your own head. Thoughts and words are racing by. You notice them silently. The center of speech is silence. From silence, you can move to any act of speech. You can speak about the past or the future. You can speak about your purpose and passion. Right now, you're centered in silence. Think about your emotions. Notice your feelings. Notice where your feelings are positive or negative. Notice how intense or moderate your feelings are. The center of emotion is acceptance. From acceptance, you can move to any emotion, positive or negative, as intense as need be. For now, you are centered in acceptance. You accept your emotions. You are silent in speech. You are in relationship with the people around you. You are centered in the present. You stand for your purpose and passion. Take one more deep breath. Inhale. Hold. Exhale. When you're ready, open your eyes. Phew, not your normal speech, is it? Please have a seat. Okay, so if the centering worked, the average blood pressure and heart rate ought to be a bit lower in the room right now. More importantly, centering can help us be more attuned to our emotions, our speech, our history and goals, our relationships, our own body, and our purpose and passion. Centering can help us know ourselves from the inside. Centering prepares us to manage our own energy and then to manage the energy in others around us. Centering is essential to leading from the inside out. You have a path in front of you, your own path. Your choices determine your path. The story you choose will determine your path. The key story, the key choice, the key question I want you to consider tonight is simple. How are you living your life? Are you living your life from the outside in, according to rules determined by others? Or are you living as a leader, living your life from the inside out? Sisters of Delta Gamma, whatever you've been up until now, you can select your story and direct your life. You can center yourself to draw on your purpose and passion. You can manage energy in yourself first and then in others. You can set the direction. You can make the bold move. You can create the future. You can be a person of influence. You can be a leader.